Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Well, good evening. Welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd, and I'm here tonight with my co-host Red Beckman and Dr. Kate. And I believe our guest is already online. Red, are you with us yet?
Not yet, but Dr. Kate is.
Hey, Dr. Kate. Boy, what an exciting day I had up at the Breakthrough Energy Conference in Boulder, Colorado.
So did you take that flying saucer home or what?
No, but I did introduce myself to some of those guys and going to have them on as guests, and we might even get John Searle on here eventually here in another week or two, which would be just incredible. I knew that that John had developed anti-gravity flight some years ago, and today I got to see some examples of his work and meet a bunch of his team, which they're really firing things up. I guess they've got a big investor behind them and ready to come online with what they call the Searle Effect Generators, which is a magnetic motor. And, boy, that thing is something to watch. So I'm excited about tonight's show, though. I want to get started with our guest right away because I know that he has got a little bit of a limited time element on him tonight. And so we're going to have to close this show out and talk about him after he leaves. But so we still don't have Red with us? I will go ahead and open us with a prayer. Father in heaven, thank you for getting me home safe tonight, for one. The traffic was pretty rough coming back from Boulder, and I just appreciate the way that you worked it so that I could safely get back here in time for the show tonight. We're just so thankful for our guest, Ron McDonald. We're thankful for his heart and his spirit as much as we are his knowledge, and his knowledge is obviously great. And we know that your spirit is leading him, and we ask that your spirit be with us during this show and open the hearts and minds of our listeners and help us to provide a message for them that is clear and concise and understandable and in accordance with your will. In the name of your Son, our Savior, Yahshua, we pray. Amen. Well, tonight our guest is Ron McDonald. Ron was on with us about a month ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and talked to us a little bit about his book, They Own It All, Including You, by Means of Toxic Currency. Ron, welcome back to Walls in Our Minds.
Thank you very much, Terry. It's a pleasure to be back.
Well, we've got a lot to cover, and I know you got a daughter's birthday to celebrate tonight. We appreciate you not bailing on us in spite of those family events going on, because those are important too. And we're just very thankful to be able to talk about some of the things that you've got in your book and anything else you'd like to bring up tonight. But I don't know how many new listeners we've got tonight versus, got to hear a little bit about you, the last time you were on. So maybe you want to give them a quick synopsis of who you are, a short bit about your background and a little bit about your book. Maybe you mention your website.
Okay. Yeah, my name is Ronald McDonald, although I'm not related to the hamburger joints. It would have been nice to be born with a silver spoon. I've been researching law for about the last 35 years, and I looked at it in a different perspective than most people. I started off looking at what you couldn't do in society without permission from someone above you, and I found that to be so depressing, so heavy on me. I mean, as far as that, you can't get into your car without putting your seat belt on. You can't go through a arterial without stopping first. You can't add on to your house without a permit. And everything was a permit, a permission situation. And I had wondered, how did we ever arrive here, when I understood that we fought in the Revolutionary War to have liberties here unlike any other country in the world. So how did we get there from here? And that's been a journey, and discovering that process took years. But as you know, Terry, I think you said you read most of the book. A lot of that that I discovered is right in that book. And it really, it's all factual. It points out everything from where we came from to the monetary system and how we've been enslaved by it. So that's been the journey.
So how do people find your website?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's at newpeopleorder.com. Newpeopleorder.com.
Well, I don't know how much of a spot I put you on tonight, because I told them you were going to explain how we got common law removed from our courts and all of us pulled underneath the admiralty law and commercial law. And maybe that's a good place to start, if you don't mind.
Okay, no, I don't. You know, when the constitutions were created for the states, the only jurisdiction that was in the state on the land was the common law. Therefore, the language of your constitution was constitutional law. And that's all they considered at that point. And they understood the principles of common law, because your unalienable rights and the common law was the law of the land. So your unalienable rights came from the land. So if you left the country and went to another country, you did not have your common law rights. You didn't have those unalienable rights because you're on another country's land. So you would have to go by whatever rules, regulations, and codes they had there. So it was very important to maintain attachment to the land. But what had happened over the years, and I'll make it concise because there's a lot to talk about, is the first thing that I recognized that really tore away at the fabric of common law was called the law of imperpetuity, and that was passed in the last quarter of the 19th century. And under that law of imperpetuity, it took the land and changed private land into commercial land. And the way they did this, and you'll see it in every real estate book or history of real estate, what they did was remove from all deeds and to his heir forever and ever. That meant that the private land, which would go down your blood lineage to your children, their children, and keep going, now severed. And now it became commercial, where it could only be held for about 25 years, and that was the limit of it. So that was the first way that they removed our rights, is through the by removing us from the common law land, or the land, into commercial. And that's basically what it did, because now, as you know, who regulates commerce? That would be your federal government or your state government if it's land properties. So we've been torn away from that. But we still had something very important in our pockets. It was called movable land. That was your gold and your silver. That's portable land, and that goes with you. So if you have that portable land, you also have your unalienable rights still attached to you. But as you can see, there was a progression back in 33 to remove us off the gold standard, thereby removing the mutable land in the gold area from us. And then in 1968 was the last time you could ever take a silver certificate and redeem it for silver. So we completely lost our access to our unalienable rights. And as I don't know how familiar your listeners are, Terry, to administrative law, but you'll see that this all happened as a chain of events in 1933 forward, where where capitalism or competition was considered an evil on society, because we were in a Great Depression at that time, and The President of the United States passed a law called the National Industrial Recovery Act, and actually he legislated it. He didn't pass it. But and in that legislative act, it regulated every aspect of society. He had total control of the economy. Congress gave it to him. And by giving him total control of the economy, a lot of the power of Congress and a lot of the powers of the courts went into the presidency. Well, 2 years later, they found that to be unconstitutional because he did legislate the act. However, the codes from that act remain on the books today. And what it was is that everything from how many doctors can pass the test per year to what the codes would be based on making china or broomsticks or anything like that. I mean, just on a broomstick, there's about 297 codes on how that is to be made. So go figure, total control on that. But what followed the National Industrial Recovery Act was the Administrative Procedures Act. And under that act, the entire blanket of law took hold of the entire United States and basically the world, because everyone falls under the similar or the same type of Administrative Procedures Act. And under that act, we have a new form of government that's set up. Unlike the three branches of the government that are basically separated, they're called decentralized branches of government. The judicial is not supposed to transfer over to the to the Congress or legislator, or the executive not over to either of those offices. But under Administrative Procedures Act, one agency has all three powers contained in itself. It is called centralized government. It's totally in opposition to what common law was, what our constitutions were created under. And now we have these agencies creating the laws, like the medical board, the DMV, the contractors board, you name it, any board out there or agency out there, creates their own rules. And it's now all done by the executive branch of government, because all agencies flow under the attorney general and flows down that way. So it's no longer do we have basically the real law being created by our legislators, by us voting on them. We now have laws or rules that we're guided under by the attorney general and all the agencies under him. So if you violate one of the regulations of an agency, you've already broken the law. And the only way you can win a case in that respect is to prove that they violated some procedure along the line. And that's as simple as they didn't do a proper notice or they didn't do this or that, you know, and that you can win your case on. However, disregarding that, you're lost. You have no rights involved in that. And I'll give you an example. A doctor can get out and save someone's life, but if he didn't do it in accordance with the medical laws that are out there, at that point, he can be prosecuted and he'll lose his license. It'll be revoked. So that's where we are today.
Well, that's huge. people have no clue of this. I mean, I've been in court a few times, and it certainly wasn't even anything that crossed my mind when I was doing it back then. And how does this change the way we need to approach when we're forced into that venue?
Well, you know, under that venue, under administrative law, you no longer have due process. You have what's called procedural due process. And under procedural due process, that's what I'm talking about. As long as the agency follows all the procedures, they will win their case, or they'll determine your guilt under that. But however, you've lost your right to access the Fifth Amendment, which is your right to due process. That means before any property can be taken from you, there must be a due process, and that's only in a court of law. So that's one of the key issues, and this is one of the ways I've gotten people out of their problems with the agency's laws, is that because you already know the outcome of an agency determination before it even goes through the hearing or anything like that, you have a right to move a complaint into the Superior Court of your state or whatever you call those lower courts. Excuse me, we have people walking. You have a right to move that case out of that agency and into a superior court for failure of your due process rights under that Fifth Amendment. Now, what's the difference between having the case heard in a superior court or whatever your court is called in your state and an agency hearing, an administrative law court? One is, in administrative law, hearsay is allowed, totally allowed. So someone can complain against you, not give their name, and that complaint can start the ball rolling where you can have your license removed or what have you in that case. But once you move into the law side of the court, and it's not really law, but it appears to be law, now hearsay is blocked. It's very rare that hearsay may be entered into as evidence against you. So you see, you've increased your odds of winning your case once you remove it out of the administrative law process.
Well, now you have, you've spent a lot of time explaining the part about the toxic currency and how it has, when they basically stole the people's rare commodity of gold and silver, how they replaced it with debt notes, and how that debt note places a lien.
Yeah.
Can you give us some background on that a little bit?
Yeah. What I did, I was researching some law for a client of mine, and it had to do with the money issue, and I came across the case, and it was called, I believe it was a 1964 Ford station wagon, and $3,976 of currency. It was a 1960 Ford station wagon. And in that case, now I'm going to read from it, it says, although presumably for the purposes of obtaining jurisdictions, actions for forfeitures, and in this case, these things were seized on the land in a Midwestern state. So it goes on to say, jurisdiction, actions for forfeitures under internal revenue laws is commenced as proceeding in admiralty. After jurisdiction is obtained, proceeding takes on character of civil action at law, and at least at such stage of proceedings, rules of civil procedure control. Well, I actually looked up the rules of civil procedures, and it didn't refer to anything but the admiralty rules, and it was Rule C. And Rule C of the Admiralty Rules deals with hypothecation, mere maritime hypothecation. And what that means, it's a big phrase for lien. That's all it means, a lien. So the IRS starts off in the Admiralty jurisdiction. Admiralty is contract on the high seas in a time of war. So it starts out in that jurisdiction when it takes your property from you. Then it takes on the character. It's not the actual thing, but the character of it. And so you don't lose yourself into thinking that it actually becomes an action in law. It merely takes on the character of an action in law. It is not an action in law. And as you can see, it's done under Rule C of the Admiralty Rules on mere maritime hypothecation, and that indicates that everything in that case, the $3,976 plus one 1964 station wagon, had liens on them, and that's why they can be taken by the IRS. And that's why it's in admiralty law, because admiralty deals with liens on goods for insurance companies' purposes and things of that nature.
I understood that admiralty is essentially a penal code.
Yeah, that's the only – admiralty and common law are the only two jurisdictions that have penal codes, or a penalty code. And as you'll see, and you can probably look it up on the internet now because everything has it, no state has common law anymore. So, but every state has penal laws, a penalty for violating the law. There's only one other jurisdiction. There's law, there's equity, and there's admiralty. Admiralty including maritime law. Maritime law is contract on the high seas, the time of peace. So if common law is missing from that equation and all you have is equity and admiralty, then you're in admiralty law when you're in administrative law. And as you can see, and it just might be coincidental, but admiralty and administrative law starts off with the same letters to start spelling them. So that's where we are. We're penalized under admiralty law, and this is a commercial state at this point. Everything is commerce. And we know that to be true because look at the monetary system. It's no longer gold or silver. It is negotiable instruments. Negotiable instruments fall under the Uniform Commercial Codes. You're in commerce. Those things have a right to be regulated. If you're using them, you're no longer a citizen, a private citizen on the land. You are a merchant on the high seas using these instruments. You pay your bills at the end of the month, and you receive them for your labor. You're dealing in commerce constantly. So, and I think I said it last time, you know what law you're in, what court you're in by the money being used in that court. And if it's in Japan, it would be the yen. If it's in the United States and it's a gold coin, then you're in a lawful court of the United States. But what happens if it's a Federal Reserve note? Then what type of court are you in? You're in commerce court. So, and they did away with commerce courts in 1913. They said they were unconstitutional in 1913, but that was before they passed the Act of the Federal Reserve. Then all of a sudden we turn over into negotiable instruments that are not redeemable, and we're totally immersed in commerce right now.
Well, we've got a bunch of people from Montana that are on this call, including Red Beckman, who's originally from Montana, although he's not there to this day because his health requires that he stays down there at sea level. But we got a bunch of ladies from Montana on here, and one of them is asking, okay, Ron knows a good amount about law. How does that help him in these kabuki courts?
Well, what we're doing right now, and this is the writ that I'm trying to publicize and get out there to everyone, is the first thing we have to do in this country is stop negotiable instruments to a degree. And we know we can't crush the Federal Reserve notes right now because the entire country would collapse. So the next best thing is to attack any instruments written in the federal jurisdiction based on Federal Reserve notes. And as you know, Terry, I've done a writ, I think it's 44 pages, and in that writ it explains that the current legal tender out there, the current Federal Reserve note that everyone has in their pocket that is represented by your check or your cashier's check or your credit card or anything like that, those current notes are not in conformance with the Supreme Court determination on what they should be. The Supreme Court has already made several determinations from the 1800s forward to the last one I saw was in 2008 called the Crummy case. And in that court it said those notes have to be redeemable. And they're not redeemable anymore. Therefore, they're in violation of supreme law. So in that writ, what we're doing, we're attacking the recorder and we're attacking the sheriff in that because the recorder records instruments by the federal government, and those instruments can be anything, a lien, a writ of execution, a levy, or all the other myriad instruments that they put in. And the basis of this is that these liens, these instruments, are based on a monetary system that is not supported in law by the Supreme Court of the United States or the supreme law of the United States. And since they're not supported by those, because they are unlawful to start with, nothing built on top of them may be lawful. And that's a maxim of law, that if the foundation is unlawful, nothing lawful may be built atop. Therefore, if the Federal Reserve liens or the federal liens are based on Federal Reserve notes, they're based on a faulty premise, a faulty foundation. And therefore, they cannot stand without the foundation being lawful in the first place. So we're going around to sheriffs and recorders of counties and asking if they'll stipulate to these writs. We've already gotten several of them that are willing to stipulate to them because they understand that this has caused a hell on earth in this country for the American people. It's destroyed the wealth of the American people. It's caused the fluctuation of the currency, everything from downsizing to unemployment to foreclosures to you name it, all the evils of society, you can pretty much base it on the currency, inclusive of criminal actions because of the currency. So that's the first step that we have to do, is we have to close those recorder's doors to federal liens. Then, once those are closed, now we get to work on the state itself. And I developed an organization called Active Liberty Alliance. It's a tax-exempt, LLC, a corporation, I should say. And what we're doing is doing initiatives, and we just started to get our feet wet. And the first initiative that will be going out there will be that no bill through the state shall be greater than 10 pages, written at a 12-point font, have but one subject in the title and one object in the substance, and being written at no greater than a ninth grade grammar level. So everyone can understand these bills that are going to be passed through your state. And the idea is we're progressively going to start retrieving our rights through these initiatives. And I think the people will back that sort of thing up.
Wow, I sure wish we could make that retroactive.
Oh, so do I. I mean, inclusive of no law that's passed shall last longer than 3 years and then must be revoted on by the people themselves. So if you have a bad law, it can be undone immediately.
Well, before we move into the spiritual side of this, because I want to spend some time in the spiritual side of this battle tonight before you have to go. And before we go there, this writ idea is kind of typical from what I've heard from you as the way that you've approached finding ways to make it difficult for Big Brother or the court or, you know, these attorneys to take advantage of your clients and customers. And I guess we should disclose that you're not an attorney.
No, I'm not.
You're not a lawyer. So you might want to visit about how you've gone about getting standing. I know we went through that 3 weeks ago, but I think it was worth going through that again briefly. And then talk a little bit about how you are this the puzzle finder.
Okay. Well, the way I get standing, most of the times when I've done paperwork, I've had the individual, the defendant, stand up, and I've already educated them on what the court will ask him immediately. For some reason, I already know what the court's going to ask, and I have him already with some answers to give the court back. Like my son-in-law, he was arrested for a DUI or drinking, and he had a .07 in his system, and he was only 18 at the time, 18 or 19 at the time. So I did a writ of prohibition for the court, and I told him as soon as he's going to file it right with the deputy sheriff in the court, you know, whatever you call them, I forget right now. But as he filed it with the deputy or the bailiff, the court stood there reading it, and you can see the head of the court just drop. I mean, he just looked at it. Name was Beamer, Judge Beamer. And I said, as soon as you get that look, you turn around and you walk out. And, you know, he's only a young kid at the time, but he did exactly what I told him to do, and they could do nothing. About 3 weeks later, on my property, a woman walks onto it. And I asked, well, who are you? And I'm up on a deck overlooking her, about 12 feet up above her. And she says, well, I'm here about Justin. And I says, yeah, what do you want? She says, well, we only want to talk with him. That's all we want to do. We just want to talk with him. I said, who are you? And she says, I'm Mrs. Beamer. I said, are you the judge's wife? And she says, yes, I am. I says, you see that street out there? And she says, yes. I says, that's where you belong. Get off the property. And she did. She just got off the property. We never heard from him again. And the case just went into limbo. Nothing ever happened with it. So that's the type of stuff that I do.
Yeah, you described it as looking at the foundation.
Yes. Yeah, I go on that particular case. Let's see, what was his? I think I used the copyright laws, that every law in the state was copyrighted, and they were not general laws. They were actually special laws of private law, and I proved it in his case. And the court just – and I also put the Title 42 in there. And Title 42 is when you have a criminal charge against an individual, not a criminal charge, but when you have a – you want to allege an injury against an entity, whether it's a court or a judge, whatever, you have a right to bring a Title 42 in 1983 in the federal jurisdiction. I put that in there and pointed out precisely the crime that was being committed, and it terrified the judge. It absolutely terrified the judge. And all they wanted to do was talk some reason into this young kid, because you know when you go into court, if the court thinks that you're in the wrong, they just have you arrested right then and there. They don't care. But this court understood the law in the matter and didn't want to trifle on the rights of the individual. So, I attacked the foundation. In this particular case, the foundation was either the motor vehicle codes or what have you that led them in there. And I proved that these were coercive laws or regulations passed by the state if they did not pass this code, this act in its entirety, federal funds would be withheld from them. So I moved in that direction on his, and it actually petrified the court at that moment, because they understood nothing lawful can be built on a coercive act, you know, if you're coerced into doing something. And I had
under
the evidence,
duress.
So they can do anything.
It's essentially duress.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly what it is.
Our friend Jan from Montana writes this in the chat room. She says, so when the feds crash the dollars and the big banks have all our money and we no longer have any of our Constitution or Bill of Rights, what's left? The one thing that I want to point out there that stands out to me is that people, and myself included, up until not too long ago, thought it was our money.
Yeah,
and therein lies the problem. And so maybe that's a good place to launch out from to get to the spiritual side of this.
Yeah. Well, it actually is not money. And the spiritual side said, remember when we had gold certificates and silver certificates? And on the printing of those certificates, even though they were commercial instruments, it said, in God we trust. But there was a treasure represented in that, in God we trust. It represented the treasury of God, the gold or the silver, which comes from the treasury of God. But then we had these other notes that we have today, and it says in there, it says, in God we trust. Well, you know, when Christ descended into hell, he took away all the powers except for one from Satan, and that power was to beguile. So on that face of that note today, it says, in God we trust, but there's nothing backing that note, absolutely nothing. But people call it money for some reason. They look at it as money. Now, I call that being beguiled, and I believe the God, in God we trust on that, is Satan, and it is not the God or the Creator or Yahweh that we believe in. That's my point on that.
Yeah, but it goes much further than that, and you certainly go a lot further than that in your book, which I think is well worth reading, whether someone totally agrees with your conclusion about that or not.
I also believe that the currency is the mark of the beast, that personally I do. But, you know, Terry, I started off titling it The Mark of the Beast, but I quickly changed the title of it only because I wanted to get to the general public at large. Because the only way you start affecting a change in people is, first of all, you have to reason with them, believers and non-believers. And in this circumstance, I had to take in consideration, I can't just get the believers involved in this. I have to get everyone that I can involved in this book, you know, in the knowledge of the book. And that's basically what I did. And, you know, I even gone to the point where even in Revelations it says that the merchants out at sea were lamenting for Babylon was burning. And I know that's the dollar. I know that's the Federal Reserve note that will be destroyed, essentially, you know, and shortly in the future it will absolutely be destroyed. I think the people are going to start taking back their states, and they're going to start doing whatever they have to do in order to gain back their liberties again. Many people don't understand the jurisdiction that they're in, and the jurisdiction they're in is that, first of all, you are a debtor. You have no rights. Debtors have no rights. You can't acquire unalienable rights if you're a debtor. You're basically in a prison. You just don't see the prison cells. You don't see the bars, actually. But you're in the prison because you cannot move across country without identification. You can't travel in a vehicle without identification. You have to tell everything about yourself to whomever. You can't get in the airport today, you know, without identifying yourself. There's no privacy anymore. And yet, that was one of the basic rights that was fought for, privacy. And yet people don't understand what privacy means. Their aspect, and I've seen this happen time and time again, what do you have to hide? Well, it doesn't matter if I have anything to hide. I have a right to privacy in everything. That's between God and me, not between mankind and me, but between God and me. You know, God is the ultimate judge, not my fellow man. So, I mean, there's a lot of spiritual overtone to that, but I try to keep it quiet because I've already gotten two or three people that gave me a one because of the religious overtones in the book.
Well, most of our listeners are God-fearing, are your Yahweh-fearing people. I mean, we do a lot of spiritual discussion on here, and we even get into, you know, natural law and God's law, and et cetera. I think you can feel comfortable in talking about those sort of things with this group. You mentioned the toxic currency as a vehicle for the beast to mark us. But
yeah.
you actually mentioned the lien, the invisible lien, as the actual mark in your book. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, and this goes back to that Ford station wagon I talked about earlier, that the reason they were able to take that is because of these liens that are hidden on everything. It was hidden in the Ford station wagon. And if you were to reason it out, if you're using an instrument that actually doesn't pay the debt, but just discharges the debt to someone else, and that discharges and discharges, and no one ever pays for the very thing they're transacting for, how could you ever say you own the thing? You can't own something you've never really paid for. And even the state says, and I think it's document 42, that the state is the ultimate ownership of all property within the state. That means you don't own anything. And that's a true statement because you've never paid for anything. And you've agreed right from the start, whenever you started your job, that you would take these beguiling notes for your labor. And the truth is that you did it only because everyone else is doing it. You never even thought about it. I'm not really getting paid anything. I'm agreeing that my labor is worth basically nothing, and that it's worth nothing to you, but it's worth a lien to the creditor. The creditor then, and this is as old as Babylon, on these instruments, the creditor, every time there's a transaction, the lien carries from the instrument into the very thing you purchased with them. And all the Supreme Court cases on the money issue says that you have the same purchasing power as gold. Well, who could deny that? You really do. But at the time those cases were done, no one paid attention to the title, rights, and interest, absolute title, rights, and interest, in the dollar, the gold dollar, that came with that. When you bought a table for $100 of gold, all the intrinsic quality of the gold entered into that article, that product, that table. That meant that since you owned that gold outright, absolutely, it was yours, no one else could say and declare it was theirs, when you owned it outright and you bought a table with it for $100, all that intrinsic qualities went right into that table and you owned that table, absolutely. No one could put a lien on it. And this is one of the reasons that we talk about in the book that you can leave the country with 10 million gold coins and you don't have to declare them because there are no liens on these things. But leave the country with 10,000 Federal Reserve notes, or probably less now, and don't declare it, you've committed a crime. So that's what's happened to our society. We have these hidden liens being transferred all the time. And even when you have, when your wife or your niece or whomever gives birth to a child in a hospital, you pay the hospital and the doctor with Federal Reserve notes. And that liens the child because it's for the purpose of the child. So there's a lien on the head of the child. And when I say the head, the entire child is now owned by the state, or by the creditor, I should say. The state really doesn't have much in it. They're using these liens, and they know what they're doing. They really do know what they're doing. So it is a battle of good and evil. We're in a mess, and most Americans haven't got a clue that all those things they've worked so hard for, they have no ownership in them. And the only people that really wake up is when someone, some agency like the IRS, swoops down and steals their bank account, or anything goes wrong in their life with taxes, and you'll see that now they're waking up. But it's unfortunate that that's the only time you see someone waking up.
Well, I know that my my co-host, Red Beckman, and Dr. Kate, Red is with us now. I know that they're going to have some comments and questions, and they'd like to get in this conversation, so I'm going to kind of open the floor to them. Red, are you there?
I'm here. Do you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah. I'm unmuted, I think.
You are. We hear you.
Okay. I have found this very, very interesting, and I'm reminded of passage of scripture that I more or less paid special attention to for a long, long time. And it's 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter, and the 24th verse. And this is what's happening right today in this book that our guest has. This is what's happening. The 24th verse of the 5th chapter of 1 Timothy. Some men's sins are open beforehand, going before to judgment, and some men they follow after. What is happening in our world today is that there are just all kinds of sins that are being perpetrated by people against their fellow men and women and such, and they're being exposed. It's just so amazing how this is happening. You know, the Republicans and Democrats, what credibility have they got today? Congress has a less than 10% confidence rating with the American people. Their sins are being exposed. They're being caught in their, you know, in their mischief and such. And it's just, and of course, you see, I have said it, Terry has heard me say this, I think, many times. We know that the USSR was dissolved in December of 1991 because the USSR was in violation of the First and Second Commandments. And the same thing goes for this federal government we call, that we have, that I call the federal God. It's going to go down, and it's going to go down, I think, in the very near future now, because of its violation of the First and Second Commandments. And I enjoy a discussion like this immensely, because this is what's happening. These sins, God is exposing these sins, and they've got an opportunity, the guilty parties have an opportunity to repent before they have to go before the judge of the universe, our creator judge. And if they don't, then their sins will follow after. But I think that this is something that is happening as we're listening to our guest tonight, and it's happening around us, and we need to be very much aware so that we recognize what is happening, what on the spiritual level. We need to understand and we need to recognize what's happening, and we need to rejoice, really rejoice in the fact that our Heavenly Father is doing what needs to be done. And there's this exposure of all this sin and this this theft, this you know, just, I mean, it's so deliberate, this stealing our rights and our inalienable rights and our money and everything else, and it's being exposed. And I'm just saying, you know, we've got to thank our Creator, our God, for all of this. And so I'll let someone else make their contribution here.
Well, Dr. Kate, would you like to make a comment? You got to unmute yourself first, though. Okay, she's busy right now. I just got a message.
I'd like to say that my biggest fear is meeting men and women who have no God because they have no conscience. And the thing that I've noticed a great deal about society is the lack of shame for acts done, for the individual acts that are done by individuals. That frightens the heck out of me, because those could be the worst enemies, are those who do not believe in a God, because they, since they have no conscience, they care not what the results are.
Well, there's an awful lot of people out there, Ron, who believe they believe in a God. And when it boils right down to it, most of them don't really even know what God it is that they believe in.
Yeah.
You know, that conference that I went to today is a perfect example of that. Some of them believe that God is in all of us or in the universe, or, you know, they mistake the creature for the Creator. And so many of them, you know, especially some of the cultish organized groups, believe things like that they are God in the flesh themselves. And you try to talk to them about these things, and, you know, they have a wall that comes up so fast on you, it just, you know, it's there. And I'm afraid that what Scripture talks about being a few, relative few, that will really make it, may very well be true. And I know that hurts Yahweh's heart more than it hurts mine. But he knows that that's the way it is. And you know, we've got to keep spreading that word and letting people understand that they're not free, that they've been lied to, and they got to stop believing the lies. Red has said so many times that the people that believe the lies are just as guilty or responsible for the mess we're in as the tyrants are. Because if the people didn't accept those lies and put a stop to that, then the tyrants wouldn't have a whole lot of power. But I really appreciate the fact that you keep the door of communication to the Holy Spirit open, and you trust what you're told. And I also appreciate the fact that you openly admit that your knowledge and even some of your conclusions have been handed to you in that way. And, you know, I don't think that makes you infallible.
I would say
some,
I would say all of them.
Okay.
All of them.
Okay. You know, I don't think any of us are infallible, and we can certainly even mistake what Yahweh is trying to tell us at times, but it gives a lot of credence to it. I believe there's a tremendous amount of merit in what you present in your book. you certainly go into a much greater detail and present your case very thoroughly in your book, and it is certainly has a great merit to it. What else would you like to share with our listeners tonight?
Well, there's one that I always maintain is that, and I've always said this on radio, and I said, if your face is facing towards your state, the back of your head is towards Yahweh. So, you know, one can't serve two masters. So you either serve the state or you serve Yahweh, and the state is not who you're supposed to serve. And the laws that are issued by the state are not the laws of God. And we know who the principality is, who it belongs to on planet Earth. So one has to always keep the perspective on who are you ultimately going to serve each day of your life. And that's why I'm a fighter. I've always been a fighter for truth. And that's drawn me, and that's what's guided me all along. It's just to find the truth. I don't care what it is. I just need to know what the truth is. And that's how I've led my life. I've taught my children the same thing. I said it's more important. Materialism is not important in life. What's really important in life is, first of all, love of God, love of your fellow man, and then put your other needs after that fact. Certainly you have to feed yourself first before you feed others, but you have to do it in harmony with your fellow man.
So how do people determine today what is truly lawful money? And the other question that I had for you specifically, because I didn't find the answer to it in the end of your book, which I thought you had kind of said you were going to get there, and maybe I missed it. But you talked about the fact that they needed lawful money. Really, was the stuff back before? Was it 1964?
1933, actually.
Okay. So why wouldn't, let's say, a silver or gold eagle today be sound money?
If it's the thing that makes it sound money is under what law it was coined. Now, your 1933 and previous coins were minted under the Mint Act, and they were minted under law. There were no liens attached to them. There could not be any liens attached to something that's lawful. After that fact, when you have these new Pneumaticist coins out there, you know, the clad coins and things of that nature, they're not minted under law. They're minted in the legal realm. And what's the difference between lawful and legal? Lawful is when you have both form and substance. That means you have the coin and you have the substance, which is the gold. So you actually have the commodity itself in a shape. That makes it lawful. But legal is when you have the form only and you don't have the proper substance in accordance with law. For your copper coins appearing to be quarters. Now, those are all legal coins. They lack substance. They only appear to be a lawful coin, but in fact, they're only legal coins. Do you see the difference there? One represents, and the other one is the actual commodity.
Well, my question should have been more specific, I guess. You know, I go and buy a silver eagle today, paid, you know, $24.50 or whatever the price happens to be at the time for that 99.9% silver 1 ounce coin for that's minted by the U.S. Mint. It seems to me to have substance as well as form. So why would it not be as good as a 1929?
If it was coined prior to 1968, it's a lawful coin. It has silver in it. So it was coined under law, and it's still good. It's still a good coin. It's a lawful coin. Is that what you're asking?
Well, no. Today you can get silver eagles and gold eagles and stuff.
Yeah, okay. Those are not printed. Those are pneumaticist coins. They're collector coins. They're not printed under law. They're printed, and they're counterfeit. They do not conform with the Mint Act. The Mint Act tells precisely how many grains of gold or silver or precious metals goes into a coin. It tells the the diameter of the coin, what is to be embossed upon or stamped on the coin, and everything is in law. Anything that does not conform to the preciseness of that law is counterfeit. I don't care if it's first, I don't care if it even has the same weight of gold in it. If it doesn't conform to that law, if it doesn't have the right stamps on it, it is counterfeit.
So you're talking the Mint Act of, or Coin Act of 1792.
Correct. Correct.
So even though these have more silver or more gold than was specified by that act, it still does not, it doesn't represent lawful. But to me, it seems like I'm really buying the metal and having it certified as to what that weight and purity is, and it should trade, you know, if the Federal Reserve notes go down, you know, next week, then my ounces of silver should probably go up in value and represent both form and substance, even though it doesn't conform to the definition of a dollar, for example, in the Coin Act.
Yeah, and the difference, the real difference is that since it's a legal coin, it can be confiscated by the IRS or anyone, and that's happened many, many times. But if it's a lawful coin, and I'll give you an example. A woman up in Alaska had told me that her neighbor had his property seized by the Internal Revenue Service. And when they went into his house, he had a plate of lawful coins on top of his stereo. They turned to him and said, could you please remove that plate of coins so we can get the stereo? So they would not touch the lawful coins, but I guarantee you if they were legal coins, they would have confiscated them because they're not coined under law. They're coined under administrative law, procedural law.
That's an interesting point. That's an interesting point. But as far as me going out and spending it, you know, I believe it's going to have, you know, the proper value, substance value in my, you know, use of it, as long as they don't get their hands on it to confiscate it.
Well, that's it. Yeah, it'll have the same, I mean, you'd probably convert it to Federal Reserve notes and have no problems, and you'd get the same if you, not that there is a conversion between lawful money and legal money, because there really isn't. But in these legal coins, there is a conversion. They can stipulate how much a legal coin is worth. But in a lawful coin, they cannot, because the lawful coin already has its value embossed on it. And it's embossed by law, not by administrative, but by law.
Interesting. Well, you got a few minutes left here before you need to go to your daughter's birthday. So what else would you like to cover?
That's up to you. You have any questions out there? Or we didn't hear from Dr. Kate. I'd be interested in hearing from her.
Well, she put a question in the chat room that said, how do we get this local sheriff to do or know anything, especially since, I won't go there with that one, but you've been approaching clerks and sheriffs and getting an interesting response from them.
I'm sorry, my wife just whispered something. Say that again, please, Terry.
I was wondering about what kind of response you've been getting from clerks and people that you have approached about your writ of prohibition and mandamus.
Well, very positive, and we've heard more from people like yourself that have actually gone out to their sheriffs and their recorders and have asked them on that. And many of the recorders are up in arms because there have been so many foreclosures passed through their office that it appears to be a crime against the people. And, you know, when someone with dignity and ethics and morals is holding a public office and they see people who are losing their homes for no good reason other than they lost their job or the economy fell and it's all due to, and they have an understanding, the economy is controlled by the bankers or by the government, they understand that it's nothing more than robbing the American people. I think many of them have had enough of that, and they're willing to stipulate to a change, and maybe not the change that I'm offering, but they certainly want to see a change, because that recorder has relatives that have suffered the same thing, you know, suffered, lost their jobs and downsizing, nieces, nephews, cousins, what have you. And it has impacted everyone in this society. So one can associate that thought process that this is in my own house this is happening. So why wouldn't they want to agree with stopping that right at the door of the state? And the state has the power to do that. The federal government can never tell the state, leave your doors open for our liens. That is by permission of the state, not by the federal government. It cannot be forced.
Well, Red, do you have any other questions of Ronald before we let him go?
I want to pat him on the back because I think that he is being used by our Heavenly Father to expose, sin, transgression of God's laws, and of course the one thing I would like to say is I would recommend, in the Bible that there's a parable that Christ had, and he said he gave this parable, and he said that the man he gave one servant 10 talents and a few talents to another and such, and the one he gave these talents to, and he went and buried them, but the other guys they went and put their talents to work, and the master was very proud of them, but the one that buried his talent had made a terrible mistake as far as the master was concerned. And I think that if you are holding Federal Reserve notes in the bank or a bank account or whatever, if you can put those Federal Reserve notes to work. I have a story that has just given me a tremendous amount of satisfaction because of my own personal, blessings that I've been blessed. I've been blessed, I think, by my Creator with having more Federal Reserve notes than I need to buy groceries with and such, and I've tried to put them to work. Sure, I could go buy the 1 ounce silver coins and bury them, but I'm not going to do that. I haven't done that, and I'm not going to do it because I think I'm getting way too much satisfaction out of investing them in things that help people to do our Heavenly Father's work and their mission. And, I'm just saying that I think if you've got extra Federal Reserve notes, put them to work out there doing something that old Lucifer isn't going to appreciate. And that's what I'd like to say at this point.
Well, Ron, we've really appreciated you coming on tonight. Have you got two more minutes for one more question?
Sure.
It might be two questions, actually. But some are asking, how do we deal with a sheriff who's not going to listen?
Then, you don't have to go to only one sheriff in one county. You can go to other counties and see who's open to it. So it's not that you're barred from every other county. All you need is one sheriff in one county in your entire state to agree to stipulate, and one recorder. And it could be in a different county to stipulate. And those would be the two respondents, and those are the people that will be served the writ after it's filed in the court. And if they stipulate to it, who's going to argue it? The Attorney General cannot argue the case if it's to the office of the sheriff and the office of the recorder. Only they could argue it.
I also had one person not really understanding exactly what it meant to have them stipulate.
Okay, stipulate is when they agree. All they have to do is verbally agree that this is the type of thing they want to see happen in the United States. And they're willing to go not on a limb, but they're willing to back it up by saying, we agree with it and we will give you no opposition to it. That's stipulating to it.
One last one. There's this thing about standing again. Now, you explained how you got standing, but before you had talked about the fact that, you know, I brought up the fact that so many of these cases had been thrown out for lack of standing, and you gave a very good explanation of what should have been done and how it should have been approached. Could you address that real quick?
Yeah. When you're doing a case that affects the public at large, you have to put in the case that it is a case based on public interest. And public interest is that it will affect, the results of this case will affect the entire population. And under that circumstance, once you put it in there, and there's a lot of case law on that, once you put that in there, they cannot deny you standing in that case. Well, you could do it as a public interest or you can do it as a beneficial interest. Either way, a beneficial interest is when you yourself will be losing a right. But it deals with the rights that you would lose or the rights the population would lose. And we're losing rights all the time. Take your pick. we're losing them all the time.
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Terry.
I know you want to go spend time with your family, and that's certainly important. I just really appreciate you a lot, Ron, and I will be in touch with you. And I'm very much interested in working with you on all these things. So,
okay, I really do appreciate that, and a blessing on all of you. Thank you very much.
Have a good night. Bye. Well, Red. We're gonna have to see if we can get Kate on here with us. I think this is a lot of food for thought, and I know that it's all of us have our varying opinions on what this really represents, especially this invisible lien. One thing that I do acknowledge, and that I believe he's correct, that these debt notes, because they are the product of a foreign corporation, places all of us under commerce or admiralty law, and in fact does represent an invisible lien. You know, we've heard from an awful lot of people who have done the research on this that, you know, the birth certificates put liens on our kids, our marriage licenses are basically an assignment of our children. And when you look at the fact that they stole all of our gold and silver, which was both form and substance, and replaced it not just with a fiat, not just with something of declared value, but it actually represents a debt or an obligation owed by the United States, which you and I know is a corporation and really doesn't apply to us, but they use it in a way that they lay that debt on the people, whether it's lawful or not, whether it's even legal or not. They've certainly convinced everyone that it is, and as a result of it representing an obligation of the United States, the people have bought into the fact that it's their obligation. And by doing so, it is a lien on us. What do you say about that specifically?
Well, you know, I have brought it up a number of times how that Satan, he offered the kingdoms of the earth to Christ if Christ would bow down and serve Lucifer. And of course, the kingdoms of the earth represent the wealth and power of the kingdoms. And so, you see, This is all satanic based. And you see, we Americans, the founders, they told us, they said, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. But you see, we weren't paying the price for liberty. We were trusting government. Now, when you trust somebody, you're not going to be vigilant, are you? If you don't trust, then you want to make sure you've got the truth. And I remember back in the 30s, I don't remember that much in 1933, of course. I was 5 years old. As I grew up in the 30s, I remember some of the discussion. And, of course, you learned about Alfred Lawson when you were out here at my place. And of course, Henry Ford, a lot of these people back there, they understood what was happening to us. But nobody paid any attention to them. Nobody wanted to listen to them because they trusted government. They trusted Roosevelt and re-elected him three times. And if he had finished his fourth term, that would have been a record, you see. But people trusted them, and when people trust, they don't worry, they don't concern themselves, they're not vigilant, they're not paying attention. And so that's what happened in this country. Old Lucifer, he won a lot of struggles, I guess you'd say, and he took over. And the churches, they went out and got themselves incorporated and became government churches instead of being a watchdog. When I went to school in civics class, they told us that the press, the freedom of press that you have in the First Amendment, was so that the press could be a watchdog on government. And they... The right to assemble. You could be a watchdog. You assembled to compare notes and study what's going on and all of that. Everything, all of the five elements of the First Amendment were all put there so that we could have the freedom to examine what the government is doing and making sure that they are staying honest and they're staying under the Constitution and all of that. But I don't think they teach that in the schools anymore, that the free speech was to be a watchdog, the free press was to be a watchdog, and the freedom of religion. The freedom of religion was to make it so that the church, the Christians, could be a watchdog on government and pay attention to what government's doing. And if the government is doing things wrong, the people and their Christian faith, they should be up in arms. And we didn't do that. And so that's how come we find ourselves in the predicaments that we are today. And so with that, I'll turn it back to you, Terry.
Well, I'm going to open the floor for Kate here and see if she's going to come in and jump in this conversation. Well, if you're talking, we're not hearing you.
Oh, it's me. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Okay, what do I say? No, this is, I think that the discussion tonight was very good, and I'm really wanting to listen to you two discuss these issues. But I think that we're getting closer to a much broader understanding of the true counterfeit, and the ways we are going to have to move to defeat it. And still comes down to, I think, that understanding of that spiritual understanding. So, you know, when I asked the question about the sheriff, and I think these ideas are very good, and we are dealing with people who do not have any fear of God. And sort of like they, I don't know, literally needing to have a come to Jesus meeting first and then moving forward, because it's truly stunning. And I just don't want to, I don't know, give up or give in. And so I want to be able to use these tools to move forward, and I still feel that I'm just not quite there yet. And anyway, so this is why I've been quiet, is because I'm not quite there yet. So perhaps I should be quiet and listen a little bit more and see if I can't contribute a little bit more.
Well, my concern here, Kate and Red, is that we are perpetrating this lean situation with this control of people's lives. We are perpetrating what Satan has put into place that's really a beguiling and criminal fraud in my mind. And here we are perpetrating it by using this product that they put out by this foreign corporation called the Federal Reserve Notes that everybody thinks is a dollar. So, I mean, to me, I got to do something. I got to take some action here to see to it that I don't have to continue doing this. I mean, I feel obligated.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said, how about you?
I'm aligned with the story of the talents right now, because I know I sort of jumped on you last week, Terry, when you said the Federal Reserve notes were the mark of the beast, and if that is the case, of course we've been hoodwinked forever, and I think that there are different directions to go in, but I do think that as long as these Federal Reserve notes are around, like, for example, if I had a Federal Reserve note right now, and literally, if I had a Federal Reserve note right now, I would not go out and buy silver. I would not go out and buy silver. That is not my goal. And I certainly would like to get away from that system, but it's just me at this point. And I'm more interested in some of the instruments, the broader instruments that that Ron was talking about, than for me. Because at this point, every Federal Reserve note that I get has to be invested in what I feel I'm doing right now, which I do feel that this is God's work here to try to do what we're doing on this water issue. So, you know, it would be nice if you had, my feeling is if I had the luxury of all these Federal Reserve notes and could change it and then operate on it, is the guy down at the, you know, local grocery store going to accept a gold coin? And does that person have the understanding to know what that is or its value? So I'm not knocking anyone who's doing that, because someone's going to have something to move or trade. But also, you know, you can't eat a Federal Reserve note and you can't eat a piece of gold either. And so for me right now, it's making every one of those count as far as I can go. And I just have to admit that just with the work that I'm doing right now, I just simply, aside from the counterfeit notion and my growing understanding of the depth of this counterfeit and the depth of the deception, I feel like I don't have the skills, if you will, right now to be able to explain or to recommend to somebody that they go buy silver. Like I say, I'm just still scraping around for the Federal Reserve note, and I would prefer not to have to use them as well. I really would. If I could do everything on barter, and that's my personal belief is that we're headed that way soon, I would. And So I'm not sure that, you know, like I said, if I had a Federal Reserve note right now, that's the last thing I would be doing would be to buy silver or gold, just because of my situation.
Right, because you need liquidity out of every penny you got at the moment. But if you had spare, if you had extra, if you had stuff sitting in savings, you might be willing to diversify, knowing that the intrinsic value of that paper is going to, you know, be approached. In other words, the actual exchange value of those of that paper is going to go down, where the exchange value of the silver or gold has remained the same for centuries.
And I say I may not, because what does that do? I do think of that story of the talents. You know, that's just me saying, good, I'm going to have this, and I'm going to bury it. For me, if I had it.
You know, let me.
Yeah, please.
Let me inject something here. let me inject something here. You see, I read that verse of Scripture there, 1 Timothy 5:24. With Dr. Kate, what we have in Montana right now is a perfect example of what is talking about there in that verse of Scripture that I read. Some men's sins are open before the judgment. There are a whole lot of people that have had their sins exposed, brought out before the judgment in Montana, in western Montana, in less than a year's time. And it probably would not have happened if it hadn't been for enough Federal Reserve notes to help finance, you know, a major project. And I think that the report I get from Montana now is that there are people there who have become very much aware of what is happening in our country because of Dr. Kate being there and doing what she has done so well. Christ, when he ascended into heaven, just before he ascended into heaven, he told his apostles, he said, ye shall be my witnesses. He didn't say you're going to be my preachers. He didn't say you're going to be my theologians and your college or seminary professors and all of that. He didn't say that. He said, you're going to be my witnesses. Dr. Kate has become a tremendous witness in western Montana, and it's not over. I mean, it's just getting, I mean, it's just going to be a steamroller going here, because these people, when she first went to Montana last November, they didn't have any good reason why they should trust her or have any confidence in her. They were suspicious and all of that. But now they have seen what truth can do, what truth, how important truth is. And they are learning an appreciation for that truth. And it would not have happened if there hadn't been some Federal Reserve notes invested. And there's people there in western Montana right now that are willing to invest in truth. They are coming around. They see, they have learned something by what has happened to them. They just about lost their water, which is so vital to mankind. And that all that good fresh water in Montana, that's a gift that God gave to we the people. And we have some very satanic, very evil people that wanted to destroy, they wanted to steal that great gift that God gave to we the people. And they got caught. Their sins have been exposed before the judgment. Now, are they going to repent? I don't think so. I think their sins are going to follow after them. And they'll meet it at the judgment. They may not believe there's going to be a great judgment, but I'm fairly confident that there will be. But their sins have been exposed here. All of those land titles around Flathead Lake there and the fraud involved in the titles, those people thought they had good titles, and come to find out the titles are fraudulent. And you see, here we again, now you see, here's our failure to be vigilant. Vigilance, the price of liberty. We didn't pay it, and we've been robbing ourselves and our posterity because we weren't vigilant. Now you see, we've got big changes happening in our country, and I'll tell you, nobody welcomes these big changes any more than I do, because I can see them happening, and Satan's chosen people are in trouble. And right at the moment, I'm so optimistic about what is happening. Sure, we're gonna continue to see some judgment on the land, but the guest we had tonight and here a couple of weeks ago, he's doing something that God wants done. He wants that exposure. And I'll tell you, the legal profession in this country is in big, big trouble. And of course, one thing that I have begun to say is that the common law, God's law, is common law. And when people, they read the Seventh Amendment, when I tell them to read the Seventh Article of the Bill of Rights, and they say, well, what about that last phrase there about according to the rules of the common law? And they ask me about that, and I say, well, the Ten Commandments, that's the common law, and that's the foundation of the common law. And God's law is common law. It is not fraudulent law. The law that politicians and lawyers and lawyer judges put together is satanic counterfeit law, and there's no other way to put it as far as I'm concerned. And I think that we're going to see the day, perhaps, where people are going to understand this all across our country. I'll turn it back to you, Terry.
Well, I one of the questions that I guess Jan mentioned in the chat room here is that she didn't really hear or understand what Ron said regarding the difference between legal silver or legal money versus lawful money when it comes to coins. Obviously, the numismatic coins are the ones that are made from base metal and clad with silver or whatever, are not in accordance with the Coin Act. But even those coins today that are minted, that are, you know, 99.9% pure and have 1 ounce of silver, they call them silver eagles, those have not been minted in accordance with the Coin Act either. Even though they have both form and substance, they can be confiscated because they carry the lien with them since they're not by the Coin Act. I'm not sure that I necessarily agree with that, but, you know, I have no reason to question Ron either. One thing's for sure, he has witnessed where they looked at lawful money and asked for it to be moved. They've also tried to pay things to the government or in court with the lawful money, with the real silver and gold money, and they couldn't see it. They actually returned it to them, which is very interesting. Now, Kate, back to what you were saying a while ago, I need to address that because I think there's still not very good clarity and understanding about the silver situation versus a Federal Reserve note, particularly with regard to the parable of the talents. If the pieces of paper are diminishing in its purchasing power, you could literally have to bring a wheelbarrow load of that paper in order to be equal to the purchasing power of one silver dollar. The silver, comparative to the fiat, is like an investment because it's always going to hold its intrinsic value, even with all the manipulation in the markets. It's still going to hold its comparative value in comparison to other commodities, where the paper will not. And here's the crux of the paper situation. They lend these paper notes out at interest. If you've got 10 farmers and they borrowed 10 hoes and they had to pay back 10% interest, where would they get the other hoe if there's only 10 hoes in existence? They can't. It becomes impossible to pay it. So what happens with these Federal Reserve notes is that they print more of them. Well, that dilutes the value of the paper in and of itself. Just the fact that they put more of them out there means that each one of them is worth 10% less. So when you get the interest, the 10% interest on that note, you haven't gained anything because the purchasing power of the 11 is the same or less than it was when you had 10. So I think it's important to recognize that that does not compare directly with the parable of the talents. And I just want to make sure that was clear. Comment?
We have to remember God's law about unjust weights and measures. Because I don't know if Ron mentioned that or not, but you see, we're fast approaching a time where that 1 ounce silver eagle or such, it's not going to have a a government-ordered value or anything. It's going to be what it can be bartered for. That's where the value of silver and such is. That's where it's going to pay off for people that have the silver in the future. Right at the moment, there are people that are buying silver when it's low and gambling that it's going to go up and then they sell it. I know people that have done this for years. And some of them have made considerable income by doing this. But you see, God's law, you know, unjust weights and measures, and boy, the Federal Reserve notes are about as visible a violation of you know, these unjust weights and measures. And then, I mean, you just can't find a better picture of it at all than that. And so, and we're coming up to a situation here where that wheelbarrow of Federal Reserve notes to get a loaf of bread, that could be out there in our future. And I hope not, but if it does, there's going to be a lot more of us Americans that are going to become informed and educated about money and, you know, about God's gift to mankind. And so anyway, always keep that in mind when you're talking about the Federal Reserve notes and such, that it's a clear violation of God's law, the unjust weights and measures. God has a special you know, a special judgment for anybody that tampers with weights and measures.
Ron mentioned that the last time he was on with us, and he also goes into that in his book as a part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the beguiling, because that's what it is. It's beguiling. How do you know the difference, Nancy is asking, between old silver, new silver? Well, you would need to go and read the 1792 Coin Act, for one thing. A silver dollar is not 1 ounce. It is a specific amount of grains of silver. Red, do you remember that by heart, what that
I don't.
Amount
I,
is?
I should. I should, but you got to remember my old age is catching up with me. If I think about it for a while, I could probably come up with it, but right offhand, I can't. And
operating from memory, which is a mistake, I think it's like 0.792 or.
I just don't remember for sure. I don't want to be coming up with a figure that's not correct.
I should go and pull up the somebody else can do that. So one of our, even our listeners, if you're on your computer, you could go and pull up, do a search for the 1792 Coin Act and post that on the chat so everybody can go and read that specifically. But my point was that, you know, at this point you're basically buying the metal. And by getting it as a minted coin, you're getting something that is certified as to its weight and its grade, so that, you know, you've got something that no one should question what the value of it is if we ended up having to barter with it or, you know, to do that. My point was that his writ and writ of prohibition and mandamus can be used as a lever to put all of the clerks, treasurer, sheriffs, politicians, you know, state representatives, et cetera, on notice that they are breaking the law, because the only thing that is constitutional in even in the states for payment of debt is something denominated in and redeemable in gold and silver. So that's the only thing. Now, pre-1933 coinage is lawful. That's when they took the gold and silver and enacted the liens. He actually said pre-1968 is what I heard him say, but I believe it, the correct date is 1964, is when there was still 90% silver in the dimes and quarters, for example. And I believe that those were under the Coinage Act. So, let's see, where was I? I'm sorry, I lost track of what I was saying. Red, do you know what I was in the middle of before?
No, I don't. I'm going to have to leave you here fairly shortly here.
Okay, we've got about 19 minutes to go on the show.
Yeah.
I could certainly visit a little bit about the conference that I went to for the Breakthrough Energy Conference if I need to elaborate for a few minutes on something. But this is very important stuff, because all of the coins that have been out there as far as small change since 64 has been made up of base metals. You know, the pennies haven't been copper, and the dimes and quarters have not been 90% silver like they were before that time.
Yeah.
The definition of dollar is spelled out clearly in the 1792 Coinage Act.
In 1792, we were still basically a Christian nation. And that's a difference we want to make sure we recognize compared to what we have today. Obama says we have a Muslim nation now, of course. But anyway, the contrast between what we had in 1792 with what we have today is it's pretty vivid.
Well, I know what I was talking about. I was talking about using the writ of prohibition and mandamus in order to force the hand of these politicians to install sound money legislation in the state. Because what this prohibition and mandamus does is it puts them on notice that they've been breaking the law, and then if they continue, then they are guilty of misprision of felony. So this could be used as a tool, because so far the dozen plus states that have attempted to get sound money legislation, most of them, all but one really, all but two, has gone down. They haven't even brought it to the floor for a vote because it's died in committee along party lines. But by using this writ of prohibition and mandamus, if you get some of the clerks, the county clerks, to stop recording federal debentures or federal
liens,
federal tax liens, documents, or even the mortgage liens are illegal because they're not payable in a currency that's redeemable in gold and silver. So by doing that, if you can make them stop attaching people's property, that's going to put a tremendous amount of pressure on them to now pass sound money legislation and force sound money into circulation. So that's powerful. That's very powerful. Kate, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Did you understand what I was talking about as far as the talents?
It doesn't mean I agree.
Okay.
But yeah, I understand, and I understand the value of these FRMs, and I'm in a completely different situation right now. And I would have to say that, you know, until we start doing some of these other things and they happen en masse, and people begin to be educated about this, it's, you know, we're, at least me, I'm stuck with that right now. And so we're dancing around the edges here, always, because this is fundamentally a spiritual problem. This is fundamentally a spiritual battle. And so in that regard, and what our role is as witnesses and what we have to continue to do here on Earth, where we are. I think I've told you before that I've kind of given up on the national level and believe that most of our work happens right here in our states and locally, that we must continue to do what we can with what we have. And if part of the effort is sound money through the mechanism that that Ron passed through or is talking about, I say go for it. And those are areas myself where I'm not, at least right now, I'm not intellectually I might be there, but as far as with the skills and with what appears to be my role, I'm not there yet. So nothing like not having FRNs and not having gold or silver to sort of like, you know, kind of lay the whole thing bare, and to be thankful that the real choice you have is to follow God or not. And these other choices are superfluous, I guess, or possibly distracting. And I'm not making any sense, I'm sure. but
what concerns me about what's going on right now with the Federal Reserve and the Treasury, et cetera, is that they definitely want to put into place a world currency. And there's so much talk right now about them coming out with a gold-backed currency. And, you know, Dr. Edwin Vieira has said repeatedly that he wants nothing to do with any banking system that uses paper currency. End of discussion. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's like just point-blank black and white about it. And the thing is that even when we had supposed gold backing, we found that they were able to create the currency out of thin air so that the money supply was still expanding, and the people did not own their deposits because of the fractional reserve banking system. So even if they came out with something that was gold-backed or silver-backed or platinum-backed or oiled-backed or whatever it is, right now the only thing that's constitutional is gold and silver. But if they changed the Constitution or ignored it like they have on so many other things and came out with this currency, they're still going to be able to manipulate it. They're still going to be able to use inflation and deflation against us, even though it's gold-backed. And we still will not own our medium of exchange. In other words, once we produce and we're paid in these debt notes, it's still going to be the same situation. They're just going to basically reset everything so that everybody thinks that something good has happened, and really nothing will have changed.
Right, and isn't that the deception that we're talking about in this spiritual battle right now? Many will be deceived and will think that this is a great deal, and those who are on the surface are going to say, oh, great, gold-backed at ferns. Gold-backed Federal Reserve notes or currency, and think that it's fine, but it's part of the counterfeit. And that's why we still need to drag it right back to the basics and to reinforce that. But short of a complete collapse and revolution, we're not escaping this counterfeit. We're not going to escape it. It's happening. This is what is in Scripture, that this is going to be happening.
I think I lost
including...
you.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
I do now.
Okay. So that's what I'm saying, is that I agree. I agree with Edwin Vieira. I don't want anything to do with it either. And we plod along. We do what we can at this point. But this is the thing. It's all part of the counterfeit. And any false solution... Any false solutions and false patriots, just part of the same thing. And that, too, has been predicted. As far as those who are supposed to be, you know, the patriots, those who are supposed to really know, are, in fact, deceivers themselves. So I think any step we go further here with any currency that's not sound money is essentially counterfeit. And that is what we're in for right now. So I pray that we are all going to, you know, be protected and be able to stand. And Jan's just got a new comment in the chat as well. Where's the USA going to get any gold to back anything right now, since most of it is overseas now, and what we have in Fort Knox is nothing. So,
well, it's not just counterfeit. It's a deception. It's a lie. And that's
yes,
the reason
that's right.
The reason that Roosevelt had to do what he did was because they started to make a run on the banks, and they knew that they didn't have enough gold there to redeem the Treasury notes that they were bringing to the banks to, you know, or to cash out on. They were demanding gold and silver in payment, and it forced Roosevelt really into that situation. I believe he was going to do it anyway, but matter of fact, they created that whole scenario.
Yeah, and they confiscated the gold and silver,
and then turned around after they stole it from the people, and then they increased the stated value from $20 an ounce to $35 an ounce, and took a 75% paper profit on what they had just stolen from the people.
It's going on. It's continued to go on. And we think, you know, I think, oh, my goodness, I wasn't alive at that time, and, gee, what were my parents doing, and what were my grandparents doing? And they were stressing out about this. But in the whole realm of time, it's just a speck of time, if you will.
There is plenty of gold and silver out there, by the way, to suffice for our commerce. That's they've lied about that, and it's the question is, where does the USA get it? Where does this corporate entity that has allowed the banksters to steal all the gold, where are they going to get enough gold to back any new certificates? Well, it won't be them backing it. It'll be the creditor backing it. It'll be the banksters backing it, because that's who's going to be issuing it. Now, if we went to the Treasury issuing it, and then them trying to claim that they've got enough to back it, well, I don't know where they'd get all of that. I do know that we're still producing it, and the mints are still minting it. There's a lot of gold and silver coinage out there, and if people were able to spend it, you know, you'd see a lot showing up quick. You know, it would be an interesting transition, though, to see how, you know, banks or the Treasury would try to accommodate, you know, a conversion of these, either, you know, the paper that's out there to replace it for people. I really don't. You can go buy it. You can go spend your FRNs right now and buy gold and silver coinage all over the place. It's just not, you know, you're not getting it. Well, in some cases, you're getting it from the government because you're buying it from the Mint. You know, there's even though they're a couple of weeks behind right now on their demand, which is really interesting. You look at the demand and how high it is, and the fact that silver particularly is in high demand as an industrial and commercial use, yet the price has been held down on it the way it has. You know, it's half what it was not too long ago. You know, a year or year and a half ago, the price of silver was up in the $42, $43, $44 range, and now it's the spot price on silver is around $23. So, you know, that's fraudulent. I mean, that's not real market value. The real market value on it should be about 1/17 of the price of gold. So if gold is like $13.30, then the price of silver right now should be around $67, $68, I believe, is about the correct number. So that market has been artificially held down, partially because of J.P. Morgan selling short and them wanting to be able to buy it cheap, knowing that the Federal Reserve notes are going to go down so that they can make a huge profit on it when that happens. Because I guarantee you the price on silver will at the very minimum triple if the Federal Reserve notes go under or if hyperinflation even kicks in. So we're down to just a couple of minutes, Kate. I believe that Red had to leave. Any final comments from you?
No, I mean, I just think we need to keep continuing to talk about this so people become familiar with where we are and what we're doing so that, you know, we can have a way out, if you will. And, but like I say, everything right now to me is steamrolling away to this new world order and to this counterfeit. And it's everything is a counterfeit. And what we have, what I'm concerned about is that this is all going to be put into place before people are completely awake. And, you know, that is a problem. Anyway, I'll close with that.
Well, in the last couple of minutes I've got, I just want to give an encouraging report today. I saw some great advances in free energy today. There are just a lot of things coming into production. Generators that are magnetic or bio-fired or the advances happening in solar energy are very, very impressive. I mean, if you had seen the four or five examples that I saw today operating, you'd be going, all right, let's get it out there before they have a chance to kill these people off or threaten them off the way they have so many over the last, you know, 40 or 50 years. You look at guys like Stanley Meyer, who had an engine that could have worked off of water, ran strictly off of water, 20 years ago, and the fact that they went to him and threatened him, and he did not bring it to the public because of that. It's just disgusting. But today there's so many people working on this all over the world. There's Japanese, there's Chinese, there's Americans, there's Australians. There's a great group of people out there who are bringing this forward, many of which acknowledge that they have been threatened, and they are not walking away. They are continuing to bring it forward. Many of them, just like the guy today that was talking about ways of protecting themselves and detoxing against the chemtrails, the aluminum and barium and stuff, there's ways of doing that now to detoxify from that. And they threatened him, and what he did is he put it out there in a whole bunch of different high position people's hands so that if anything happens to him, it's going to come forward. So I'm very encouraged. And with that, I will say good night. Thank you for joining us tonight, and we will see you next week on Walls in Our Minds. Good night, Kate.
Down in Tennessee, and just like the days of Noah, we'll water covered our land, and now we're asking y'all to kindly lend a hand. We'll lend a hand to your neighbor, throw a lifeline to a friend, say a prayer for the ones that washed away. We'll dig down deep in your soul, let your heart overflow. Every woman and every man, come on, lend us a hand. Well, the Cumberland, she went crazy and climbed up out of her banks, came all the way up and over that opera stage. Well, that wind just kept on blowing and it rained to beat the band. Now we're praying all you good folks to just lend a hand, come on. We'll lend a hand to your neighbor, throw a lifeline to your friend, say a prayer for the ones that washed away. We'll dig down deep in your soul, let your heart just overflow. Every woman and every man, come on, lend us a hand. Oh, play it!